Guys, are you ready to heat things up this Christmas? Go with a win-win this year, something that'll make her feel hot and heat up your holiday too. How? Super warm, world-famous hoodie footy from our friends at Pajamagram. The hoodie footy is the ultimate solution to get her hot when she's freezing cold. It combines the warmth of a hoodie with the coziness of footed pajamas. She's going to love it. Go to pajamagram.com today. Use code SAVE10 and you'll save $10 on adult-size hoodie footies when you use that promo code SAVE10. That's pajamagram.com, SAVE10. Tell them AJ Hoffman sent you.
The opinions of Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman don't reflect the views of Gal Media. Parental discretion is advised. KFNC Mont Belvieu, Houston, a Gal Media station.
19 straight completions now for Drew Brees that ties his career high in a game. But I think he's searching for another mighty mark. Will he get it here? Yes! Touchdown pass, 5-4-0 in the 5-0-4.
12th play of the drive. First and goal from the 5. Brees under center, I formation. Got takes it. The handoff. Looks to throw. Wide open. Touchdown, Josh Hill. 19 years, 273 games, over 76,000 yards, and now 540 touchdowns. Drew Brees, take a bow.
Not sure how we got here. It just, you know, kind of makes your whole life and career flash before your eyes, because I never thought I would have had the chance to be a part of something like this. And just looking at the entire journey, 19 years from 5 years in San Diego to 14 years here, and incredible teammates and coaches that I've had the chance to play with and for, this team right here, who's very special, and of course our fan base, the Houdat Nation, everybody in the dome tonight, everybody watching tonight, you know, loved ones, my family, my kids here, you know, both my college roommates, two of my best friends in the world, they were here.
Sports.
So they just sit there and talk about sports?
So is that an Academy Award acceptance speech or what? Hey, the guy did throw an incompletion. Let's not get too crazy here. Let's do this. It's a Tuesday on the Blitz.
Shall we begin?
Live from the Gow Studios in Houston, Texas. This is the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And the Blitz is on for Tuesday. Welcome to the greatest show in the history of the known universe with me, Fred Fowler, the Falcon, A.J. Hoffman, the soon-to-be TV producer, Aaron Rabel, the Voldemort. If you want to get in today, 713-780-3776 is your number, 713-780-ESPN. Can also get us on the Blitz Facebook page. Send a message. If Aaron likes it, he'll read it. It's his chance to participate, so you'd be doing him a solid. There's Twitter, at Fred Fowler, F-A-O-U-R, at A.J. is the real. At Aaron is Blitzed, at Degenerates975. You can also text the show. You know the number for that. And it's Tuesday when you guys are usually in a bad mood. Don't be, because it's probably a short week for a lot of you, or at least a quiet week, because next week's like holiday stuff. And don't forget the Twitch channel. If you want to get us on Twitch, you can do that. And, you know, we always talk about performances. And the biggest overreaction in sports is the day after somebody does something great is to say, oh, this is one of the all-time great performances. Drew Brees did last night. I think you actually have to have that conversation.
Pretty ridiculous. it kind of, when you see all the numbers, he is in that conversation now. I mean, it's
remember we were talking about Rushmores, and he wasn't quite there because you kept talking about all the other guys, but
the problem with him is he played in an era where he was basically always overshadowed by Tom Brady and Peyton Manning.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
But I don't think that should necessarily diminish his greatness. I mean,
And the thing is, the fact that he never won an MVP is kind of a fluke. And I think that's one of the things that when you start talking legacies, that's one of the things that people will probably mention against him. But, I mean, the touchdown record.
Who cares? Yeah. I mean, he's Dan Marino with a ring.
Exactly. And he may get another one. I mean, they've been so close the last 2 years. I wouldn't be shocked if they got to another Super Bowl. And at his age, and you keep thinking, oh, he's going to slow down. That was the best performance of his career last night. There's no way around that. You know, one incompletion. And, of course, that's all he would talk about after the game is he didn't set his feet, and that was his miss.
But to have a night like that at the age of 40, when we're sitting here watching Tom Brady at 42 look like he's 52.
Yeah.
It's pretty unbelievable. And, you know, I and I'll be honest, I think over the course of my radio career, I've underappreciated Drew Brees. And it's hard to imagine that a Super Bowl champion quarterback like Drew Brees could somehow long-term fly under the radar of having such a crazy great career, but he really has because of those other two guys. And do I think that he's better than those two guys? Probably not.
No.
But it's a lot closer than most people would want to discuss. I mean, he's right there. And the numbers say that he is as good as them. You know, it really is fun to see that dude play. And he's still got it, obviously, at 40 years old. Almost 41.
Yeah, yeah.
Less than a month away from 41.
And, you know, we always talk about when these guys finally break down, it all goes fast. But in his case, yeah, I mean, it's not. I mean, we were kind of talking earlier, maybe he's not quite the same player, but... And then here you go with the negatives already. While I agree that his performance last night was impressive, he was playing against a team defense that has folded things in for the year.
Right.
No motivation.
But this was listen, I don't care who you're playing. You have one incomplete pass the whole game.
Yeah. You can't do that against air.
It's really difficult.
Go
watch guys throw at the combine.
Yeah,
they
don't pro
complete
days.
29 out of 30.
No, no. And motivation or not, I mean, that's you're still out there playing in an NFL game. So, I don't know. It's hard to, and somebody mentions this, and you know it is a fair point that with the QB friendly rule changes, it's hard to put as much weight into the numbers.
Certainly.
This year. And you mentioned that right off the top because you can't really go back and compare the Terry Bradshaws and Joe Namaths because the interception numbers were way up because defensive backs could actually play defense back then, and you know so when you talk about eras. And that's why what Marino put up numbers-wise was sick.
Yeah.
Because that was a very different era in terms of what defenses could do. But with the rules the way they are, you still have to go out there and do it. And, you know, it's... I think he's... Yeah, that's right. He missed the playoffs with the Saints in 07, 8, 12, 14, 15, 16.
Okay. That's what... I mean, again, is he Tom Brady?
No.
But... So he missed the playoffs four or five times in his career.
And go look at how bad his defenses were for the first bunch of those.
Dude, I mean, trying to pick apart that guy is basically, it's nonsensical.
It's silly. It's like trying to rip Tom Brady for his career. Or Manning. Oh, Manning was terrible in the postseason.
Okay.
He was also the greatest regular season quarterback that ever lived.
Yeah.
And that's got to count for something. He was James Harden, but then he won a title. And... Yeah, the second one, I'm not giving him too much credit for because he didn't really win that one for him, but he didn't lose it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, if Brees could get a second one, do you put him over Manning? I don't know.
Well, I think if he wins a second one, he's in the conversation with Manning, certainly. But I don't see how – I just don't see a way to look at what that dude's done in his career and go – Yeah, but
exactly.
Okay,
that's just what people have to do.
Yeah,
if you're like, oh, I got to tear this down somehow. Okay, the thing is, and I don't want to start. This will start happening, I guarantee you. It's like because Brady's not playing well this year, that's going to be the image people are having in their minds when you talk about Tom Brady now.
Yeah,
and when it shouldn't be. We should be looking at his whole career, and maybe he should think about hanging it up at the end of this season. I don't think he will. I don't think either one of these guys has any intention of quitting anytime soon. But that's something that, yeah, I can see people doing. Say, well, but look at Brady now. It's about the career. And no matter how you want to put it, if not up there, that is one of the best passing performances I've ever seen. And I'm old.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun to watch, and I told you before the game, I just needed Michael Thomas to get 14 points. Drew Brees made sure I got it.
Yeah.
So I'm happy with Drew.
Yeah, well, I needed Jared Cook to outscore Michael Thomas by 45 points.
Sorry for your loss.
There was no chance in hell. So, the Manning comparisons are the ones that, you know, I think are more apt. And was Manning better in the regular season throughout the course of his career? Yes. But man, numbers wise, this guy's been pretty damn good for a long, long time. And again, a lot of times he had really, really crap defenses.
It's one of those things where you don't have to have like just because one guy's great doesn't mean he has to be better than the other guy or vice versa. It's just, I mean, we're living in an era, especially the era that's kind of coming to the end, where I think most people will look at it as the Brady Manning era of football, but I think it's almost criminal to overlook Drew Brees over that same amount of time because it is impressive.
Yeah, that's it is. You're right. It's always going to be Brady Manning, I think, no matter what Brees does here at the end of his career. But boy, when you talk about the whole, you know, all the great quarterbacks of this era, I mean, he's right behind them, and I think the gap between him and number four is pretty big.
Yeah.
So I don't even know who would be considered.
It's probably Aaron Rodgers.
Probably. And, you know, his career has been, well, the last few years haven't been great for him either. But
no.
When he's healthy, he's up there. But
and here it comes. How can you say Brees isn't better than Manning? Again, I'm not saying any. Like, in my mind, Manning's better. How can you say it if he just broke his records? Well, it took him a year longer to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already had a longer career than Peyton Manning did, and he's still going.
Yeah,
so,
one stat doesn't make you better than a guy.
No.
But
it, like, and there was never a question that when Peyton was playing, I mean, Peyton was a force. The one thing that'll always kind of knock Peyton is compared to some of these other guys, he gave the ball away a fair share.
He did.
He turned it over a lot. Drew Brees has been pretty damn, like, especially as he's gotten older, which is crazy because he's throwing more than ever and he's taking care of the football.
Yeah, and the thing that helped him last year was Kamara was so good.
Yeah.
He hasn't been much of
anything. Kamara's been horrible this year.
But and I think that's that description you said of Manning. Manning was Marino with a ring.
That's what I was saying about Drew Brees.
Well, I think that's a good one for Manning, too.
Well, he's Marino with two rings.
Yeah, I'm not counting the second one. I'm not giving you the second one.
Okay.
Because he led them to the first one. There's no question. They don't do that without him. I'm pretty sure they could have thrown the ostrich out there and won that game the way Cam Newton played and the way that defense played. So it's not to diminish his second ring, but sometimes you win. Well, and if we want to be honest, Patriots' first ring wasn't because of Tom Brady.
No, but we still count it.
We do. All right. We are going to take a very quick break. It is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Need to know your place, 'cause it's about to get.
This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. You are listening to The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. 713-780-ESPN is your number. 713-780-3776. Space Ghost says it would be fun if Brees could Elway it and win two Super Bowls in his last two seasons. That certainly changed the way everybody looked at John Elway.
It really did, because I look at Elway as one of the three or four best guys of all time. Again, we talked about that Rushmore, I think, a year ago, and I said, we were talking about who could you take off of it. If you said it was Montana, Brady, Manning, Elway, who could you put Breeze up there for? I still don't think there's anybody you can.
No, I don't either. I mean, I still would have Marino really high on my and that's the thing. That was kind of the Marino Elway era.
Yeah.
And that's what people think of that as. But, you know, it's tough. The fact that Marino only got to one. But he carried that team. I mean, they were nothing without him.
I mean, let's face this. If it were just about what you – like, if the NFL wasn't a ring-counting league, no one would ever tell you Joe Montana was a better player than Dan Marino.
I think that's more than fair.
But it's a ring-counting league, so
– right.
You know, because I always argue Steve Young is maybe the most underrated quarterback ever, because I think he could have won all those rings that Joe Montana did if he were the guy.
Well, and if he hadn't have started in the USFL and played with Tampa. Yeah. But, I mean, the thing is that's really difficult to judge with stuff like this is the 49ers were just a great all-around team.
Right.
And... With a great system and a great quarterback.
Well, we were talking about who you credit rings to, and I mean, if we're going to do that, it's how many rings does Troy Aikman? How many did he really go out and win?
Yeah, zero.
I mean, because he played on a great team. He was Terry Bradshaw. I mean, Terry Bradshaw to me is maybe the most overrated guy ever because of ring counting. I mean,
well, and
Fred, you could have won those rings.
Well, I don't know about that, but plus I was like 12 years old.
Yeah,
but.
Still.
No, but the thing with him is, again, the rules were so much different. You just look at his numbers, and they don't look that great. But he also had how many Hall of Famers on his team? And that was pre-salary cap. And that's the same thing. That's kind of the criticism I would have of Aikman pre-salary cap. They were able to not only keep all those great players, but bring in Charles Haley, bring in Deion Sanders, and get better and better. And that's why those teams were so good. So it's not always on the quarterback. But I think if you... You know, it wins and losses are, to me, the hardest thing to quantify with quarterbacks, because how many are they truly responsible for? And I would just say the two guys that I think made the biggest difference individually over their careers were Marino and Manning, as far as individuals carrying their teams and winning games. But neither one could do it in the playoffs. So they're James Hardens. They're quarterback James Hardens. How's that? Yeah. Well, 713-780-ESPN. It's a fun conversation to have after a guy does something like he did last night. And
they're almost assuredly going to make sure that Michael Thomas is going to break that record too, Marvin Harrison's record.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're going to actively work to do that.
83-2 asks, is quarterback the only position in the NFL where we do ring counting?
Yep.
I would say when you talk about Hall of Fame, wide receivers are in that conversation. Because
does anybody question that Randy Moss and T.O. are the right behind Jerry Rice?
Obviously, because look how long it took for T.O. to get in.
You know, that has nothing. I mean,
now we're having a different conversation.
I don't know that I'm talking to do about their rings. Well, I think it more had to do with their personalities than.
And I had switched it over to Hall of Fame voting, and that's why it's so difficult to split guys up like that. That's why everybody was talking about Julian Edelman last year. That guy's no way. He's a Hall of Famer, but he's got enough rings now. I guarantee you he's going to get a lot of love for it. I don't know that he'll get in, but should we even be talking about Julian Edelman as a Hall of Famer?
No.
But I do think ring counting counts with stuff like that. And it does count with a team like the Patriots who have won so many. That gives, when you get down to that conversation, it's like, wow, look how many Super Bowl teams he was a part of. He was a great player and he was part of this. Of course, they churn so many players. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a... But I think quarterback is certainly the most important. That's why Eli Manning is going to get in with a 500 record.
I mean, that's why Joe Namath is in.
Yeah.
And Joe Namath isn't even really that good.
So, I think, I said, fun conversation. St. Patrick says, Larry Fitzgerald, he has more tackles than drops in his career. I think he'll get in.
I do, too. But if you're talking about Larry Fitzgerald being better than... Moss and T.O., that's not...
Or even Calvin Johnson for his short time that he played. But as far as that resume, I mean, that's I think he's definitely in that conversation.
Yeah.
And remember, he and Andre Johnson had almost the same numbers for most of their career, and he's still going. And I think he's gonna play another year.
I do too.
And I think that he's now you're getting into Biggio-ing it a little bit. But so I mean that's part of it when you're gonna get into that conversation. But I do wish there was something better than a Hall of Fame. I'd like to see, because I think guys like Marino, Elway, all those guys we're talking about, and I think Drew Brees, I'd throw into that conversation too. I think that's, those guys are true Hall of Famers more so than, say, Kurt Warner.
Right. And so I mean, it's like, does Babe Ruth belong in the same Hall of Fame as Tim Raines?
Right.
You know, or Mickey Mantle and Craig Biggio, like there should be separate wings for like, we want to give you guys some credit for what you did, but you're not in the Lou Gehrig Hall.
There should be a Hall of the Elite.
Yeah.
And do something there. It's is that Jake? I can't read that far anymore.
Jake.
What's up, Jake?
Yeah.
Go.
Yep, I'm here.
Well, go ahead and let's talk.
Hey, appreciate it. Yeah, so we were listening to the quarterback talk about Dan Marino stacked up with today's greatest, Peyton Manning. And one of the things that I think we need to mention is, you know, when Dan Marino threw for over 5,000 yards, it was in 1984. And so if you think of that and you think, was it harder or easier to throw a football and catch a football in 1984? And I think the answer is it was much harder to throw a football and much more difficult to catch a football. And you're talking about 1984 when it wasn't a pass-first, era. So I think that needs to be weighed a little bit more different than some of the quarterbacks today.
Well, I don't know that it was more difficult to pass a football. And especially the way – another reason why I like the Marino-Manning comparison, those guys could win without an offensive line because they got rid of the ball so quick.
Yeah.
And now catching it was a little different because defensive backs were allowed to do more. And the other thing, too, it wasn't just – there had been other guys who had already started to change things. And like Dan Coryell in San Diego was basically, all right, we're throwing the ball. We're going downfield with it. So there were teams that were doing this. So it just wasn't as prevalent. I mean, the whole thing was run the ball, play defense, run clock, be physical. And you had some guys who started doing that. And Marino, those numbers are pretty incredible, but I don't know that it means he would have thrown for 6,000 in this era because of the amount of passes he threw. I think it's probably a little more impressive than a lot of these guys because defensive backs could make contact down the field. But I think if you go back and look at that offense, I mean, they threw a lot. They threw downfield a lot, and it was just a different thing. And it went in eras. Man, if you go back this is going to be really old. Go back to the early 60s and go look at what the Buffalo Bills teams did. With like Jack Kemp at quarterback, they were throwing for 4,000 yards, and there were guys that you'd never like. There's a Chiefs quarterback whose name escapes me. I think it was like Brian Kinney. He threw for 4,000 yards, so it's not that rare. And I do think there are some it's not totally the same, but I don't think it's as different as everybody wants to make it out. Does that sound fair?
I think that's fair.
Okay. Bill Kinney, that's who it was.
Someone says, do you think Jerry Rice's record will always, like, do you think anyone will ever break that record, Jerry Rice's era in the passing, in this passing era? Like, as far as receptions or yards, I don't know exactly what you're talking about, but I will say that I don't know how much longer Larry Fitzgerald can play, but Larry Fitzgerald's still a pretty good player. I don't think he's an elite wide receiver anymore, but he's still a pretty good wide receiver on a really bad team. And I think that dude in his entire career has missed like 5 games ever. Yeah. So he's super durable. And he's probably, I think he's like 200 catches behind Jerry Rice. So if he plays until he's 40, it's doable.
Especially if he winds up like What if he went to New Orleans next year?
Yeah, if he went somewhere where there's like
Green Bay or someplace with a quarterback.
And also, that's the craziest thing to consider with Larry Fitzgerald is, I mean, he did have some years of Kurt Warner. He did have some years of Carson Palmer. But he also had a lot of years of really bad quarterback play. And to the fact that he's even in the discussion with a guy who spent his entire career with Joe Montana and Steve Young, I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Bill Kinney, 1983, 4,300 yards.
I remember that like I was three.
I remember that like I was graduating from high school. But the point is, it wasn't that rare for a guy to put up big passing numbers. Just Marino was better than everybody else and put up bigger numbers.
I got to tell you about Pajama Gram. Guys, how about a win-win this year? Something that will make her feel hot and will heat up your holiday too. How? The super warm, world-famous Hoodie Footy from our friends at PajamaGram.com. Because let's face it, it's hard to be hot when she's freezing cold. And the Hoodie Footy is the ultimate solution because it combines the warmth of a hoodie with the coziness of footy pajamas. And that head-to-toe warmth means she'll be cozy in no time. And it gets even better because PajamaGram is including free gift packaging. That means you don't have to gift wrap. How about that? That makes your whole life easier. It's a life hack. They're also backed by a 100% lifetime guarantee. Delivery by Christmas, guaranteed. So there's no risk here. If you're not looking for Hoodie Footy, they got a bunch of sexy stuff. They've got the barely there, the nearly nude stuff that is just, you know what it is. It's for you. And here we go. To celebrate 10 years of Hoodie Footy, right now they're offering a discount, $10 on adult-size Hoodie Footies when you use the code SAVE10 at checkout. Go to PajamaGram.com, use code SAVE10. That's PajamaGram.com, SAVE10. Tell them AJ with ESPN 97.5 sent you.
Doesn't change when they bury me.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we're back on The Blitz. Trey One says, I think by passing being more difficult, he meant the beating quarterbacks took its toll through a season in their career. Marino could hardly walk in the end. Yeah, except Marino didn't take a beating. That's the thing. He got rid of the ball so fast. His 5,000-yard year, he was sacked 13 times. The second leading passer that year was Neil Lomax. You might remember Neil Lomax.
Yeah. Great.
4,614 yards. He was sacked 49 times that season. So, and Marino, I think, just wore down, but it wasn't like he took a beating. That guy got rid of the ball so fast. And, yes, you could beat up quarterbacks a lot more back then. And yeah, I that's a fair point, but just looking at last year, the guys who put up 5,000 yards, 45, 49, all had over 600 attempts. When Marino did his 5,000 yard season, 564 attempts.
Damn,
he did have 17 interceptions and 48 touchdowns. I think I'd take 48-17 any day of the week, even now.
Yeah.
Or you could have Jameis Winston, who could be 40-40. You give him credit.
Man.
It's just interesting to kind of look at the stat, because I don't think there was as much difference as people want to make out now.
I was looking at with receivers, because someone was asking about the Jerry Rice thing. With receivers, I guess the things to look at, the records that Jerry Rice holds are receptions, receiving yards, and touchdowns.
Yeah.
I don't know that anyone's ever going to catch his receiving yards record. Jerry Rice has 22,895 receiving yards. For Larry Fitzgerald to catch him, he would need 6,000 more receiving yards.
So he'd have to play minimum five more years and have a couple of really big
solid
seasons.
Years. Yeah. I don't see that happening. So Larry Fitzgerald second all time. The next active player, so Larry Fitzgerald's at 16,990. Next on the active list is 12,939. That's Jason Witten. I don't think he's going to catch him.
Nope.
Next down, Julio Jones, 11,881. Think about Julio Jones. Julio Jones has just over half the receiving yards that Jerry Rice has. I mean,
I would have thought he'd have been a lot farther along than that.
I would have thought so, too. Now, here's what I will say. Julio Jones is in his ninth year, and Jerry Rice played 20 years. So if Julio Jones hasn't really shown a propensity to stay all that healthy.
Yeah, well, and that's Jerry Rice was never hurt until the end of his career.
Yeah. Next is Antonio Brown, 11,263. He's going to have a hard time catching
him. Yeah, he doesn't even exist anymore.
10,420, DeSean Jackson. You can forget about that.
Yeah.
9,763, Demaryius Thomas.
Nope, he's broken.
8,907, A.J. Green.
A couple years ago, I would have said, you know, that's a guy I'd watch for. But he's not going to play 20 years.
Now, here's one that's interesting. DeAndre Hopkins, 8,579. And he's in his seventh season?
I don't think yardage-wise he could ever do it because he's had some big yardage years, but he's more of a receptions guy than a yardage guy. But I don't know. He's also the kind of guy that I think he can play for a long time.
Yeah. I'll tell you a guy who's on a really good pace, but he can't stay healthy either because he's only in his sixth year is Mike Evans. Mike Evans already has 7,260 receiving yards.
Boy, if he could have like a 1,800-yard season here in the next couple of years, he could jump up that list pretty quickly.
Think about that. Mike Evans has 150 less receiving yards than Michael Crabtree, who's been playing, it seems like, forever. So, yeah, the list is a bunch of old guys. It's Jimmy Graham, Emmanuel Sanders, Golden Tate, Vernon Davis. I mean, the list of guys that are active that actually have a reasonable shot at doing that is very small. Odell Beckham, 6,386, and he's played 5 years. I mean, but he also seems like maybe he's declining. I don't know. That record might stand forever.
I think it's going to be, at some point, somebody will come along and play 20 years because guys are taking better care of their bodies. But you got to stay healthy that whole time, and you got to play for good teams.
You've got to play for a long time. Yeah,
and you have to be, oh, by the way, pretty damn good to do it.
Yep.
So I'm not going to say never. It probably won't happen in my lifetime, which, you know, is probably about a week.
I will say had Randy Moss been able to play as long as Jerry Rice did, he potentially could have done it. Same with T.O. Randy Moss and T.O. had about the same length career, about 15 years. But Randy Moss was suspended a lot.
Yeah.
You know,
that he had some amazing seasons, especially in Minnesota.
Yeah. And he's probably, I hate to say he's the best I've ever seen because I did see Jerry Rice and it's hard to say that he's better than Jerry Rice, but like from just a physical tool standpoint, he's better than Jerry Rice was. Like Randy Moss was. If you were building a wide receiver, that's what you were building.
Well, I think if I were going to build a guy and you say I get a 5-year career with him, I would have taken Calvin Johnson, I think.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, just from the physical skills that guy had.
Well, I always said Calvin Johnson was sort of a Calvin Johnson was a blend of T.O. and Randy Moss. He had T.O.'s build, like he was a big, thick guy with Randy Moss. Well, not quite Randy Moss's top-end speed, but close enough.
Yeah.
You know, he was a freak show.
But, yeah.
And he finished 31st on the all-time list.
Yeah. Well, I didn't, you know, I guess I didn't reference the all-time list that they did for my guys. So, but I think, it is kind of cool. And I hope people appreciate that we're in an era where we're seeing a lot of A lot of greatness.
All-time great players.
All right. I'll tell you about another all-time great. How about my bookie? And right now, they're doing a totally cool thing. They're doing their 12 days of risk-free gifts from my bookie. And all the way up through Christmas Day, free parlay on UFC last weekend. They got free bets, free spins, free futures, and more. It just depends on the day. And if you get in there today, you get a free $10 blackjack casino chip. So you can go in there and crush it on blackjack. But you got the NFL, NBA, NHL in full swing, college bowl games around the corner. It's just a great time of year for sports betting. Whether it's parlays, teasers, specials, anything you could ever ask for, MyBookie is here for you. Head over to MyBookie.ag right now and use our promo code radio to get half of your initial deposit in free wagers. And that's just the start of your savings. Put it on your daily calendar to check out MyBookie.ag between now and the 25th because there's something new every day and you're going to want to take advantage of all of these deals. So sign up at MyBookie.ag with our code radio. Start winning today, MyBookie.
Kiss you next week.
May I have everyone's attention?
You're listening to The Blitz.
Lock and load, boys.
On ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
Joining us now on the program is the head coach of the Texas A&M men's basketball program, Coach Buzz Williams. Coach, how you doing today?
Good morning. How you doing?
We're hanging in here out here. I see you. We're talking a little later than normal. You had an extended practice this morning. I guess you're getting your guys focused, prepared for the next game with Oregon State.
I apologize for being late. One of the things that happens, you know, our kids are not in school. So they finished their finals last week. And so this week we're having a little different flow relative to the day. Today we're having our team Christmas party tonight. So our day's been backed up a little bit. So I apologize.
Oh, it's all good. Now, let's talk about this last game against Texas A&M Corpus Christi. The game was fairly even until close to halftime, and then they went on a run for about 6 minutes where it looked like that game could have gotten away from you. You guys refocused and are able to come back and get that win over a school that's part of your school system. The shooting still seems to be a problem, but the turnovers were improved. How'd you feel overall about the performance against A&M Corpus Christi?
Really tried to focus all week on limiting our turnovers. I thought we did a much better job. Was not a fast game, so our turnover percentage was lower, maybe not quite as low as we need it to be. But for sure, there was some traction relative to making sure that we got a shot. They attempted one more field goal than we did, but we did a lot. We did a very good job of getting to the free throw line. That's a portion of it. But did a better job not turning the ball over.
Last time we talked, you said you need the Josh Nebo that showed up at Texas to show up regularly, yeah. And it looked like you had a good showing from him, particularly on the boards.
The good thing that's happened, AJ, in the last two games is I think Nebo has been consistent relative to his production. And E-Man, he was freshman of the week in the SEC this week. I don't know all of the freshman numbers. But specific to us, was very impactful. At Texas with 14 rebounds, and then against Corpus, he had 20 points and only missed one field goal attempt. So those two guys have been able to give us about 65 to 70 minutes relative to their positions, which has given us consistency in those two games. So we're thankful for that for sure.
Are you surprised that you've gotten so much out of Miller the last couple games? I mean, it seemed like you were working him in slowly, and then against Texas, you just threw him into the fire, and he's really responded.
Well, kind of like what we talked about, I guess it would have been prior to the Texas game, after we finished in last place in Orlando, turnover rate and offensive rebounding percentage, both were atrocious all three games. And we've got a long way to go, but the wounds that have ailed us the most, that we're bleeding the most from, are turning it over too many times and also giving the opponent too many extra opportunities. For the season, we're holding teams to 34% from the field on their first shot field goal percentage. Overall, we're holding teams to 39%. Doing a really good job numerically, defensively. But where we're losing is that they're shooting 52% on their second and third opportunities. So who can help us stop that? Who can help us be on the floor and only give the opponent one shot defensively? And then who can help us when we have possession, help us get a shot? And E-Man, for sure, in the last two games, has made a distinct impact in that regard. Low turnover rate because he's not a ball handler or a perimeter player, but he's done a really good job on the glass. And I think, just like anybody else in any industry, when you have some success and you know where that success came from, you're working towards that, and that's what he's been able to do the last two games for sure.
Your next matchup against Oregon State, this will be just your second matchup against a quote-unquote Power 5 conference school. I would say Gonzaga is sort of a mold breaker, but this will be some of the better talent you've seen across the floor from you. What are you doing to prepare your guys for that?
We were off. We played Sunday night. We were off yesterday. You have to give your kids off one day a week. We just finished film. Our guys are about to train. We'll close down practice this afternoon, all based on what we learned from Corpus Christi, and then we'll have prep on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, leading into Oregon State. Coach Trinkle's son is arguably one of the more efficient players in the country. The assistant coach, you may remember him, he played at Syracuse, Coach Thompson. His sons are the next arguably most effective, productive two players. You see, the coach's sons at Oregon State are really good. They play a distinct style defensively that will be unlike any that we've played through the nine games thus far. They've lost one time. I think they play tomorrow against UTSA in Houston, so they'll be in Texas for most of the week. I anticipate they'll be 9-1 when they get to Reed on Saturday. Will be a different type of prep. We had a week to prepare for Texas, but Texas's style of play in comparison to Oregon State's is distinctly different. So it'll be a good test for us, and our prep, as you ask, will be critical over the next 3 days.
What's the program look like over the holiday? How much time do you have with the kids? How hard is it to keep them focused on what's going on, and how do you balance that?
Yeah, thanks for asking. It is a different vibe. The kids, in essence, were through with school at the end of last week. They finished their finals. Depending upon what their degrees were in and what year they are in school, we had Chuck and Nebo both graduated on Friday, so our day was a little different. This week, there is no study hall. There is no class, so we kind of break up the day relative to how we go about our preparation. We'll be off on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Wednesday, I think, is Christmas Day, and then we'll start back to work on the 26th. We have one non-conference game against Texas Southern, and then the first Saturday of January, I think, is our first SEC game at Arkansas. And so once they come back from Christmas, AJ, up until when school starts, which I think is the second Monday, we'll kind of be in the same type of groove that we're in this week. Our kids need a break. It'll be good for us. A four-day break is probably about the average. 3.5 days normally is what I would say. We had to schedule some games when we took the job. I think 5 games is what we had to schedule when we were hired here. And so the actual non-conference schedule rhythm has been unique to any that I've had thus far. The Oregon State game is a series that started, I believe, I think they played a neutral site game as a part of the contract last year in Portland. And then the return, obviously, is this weekend. So I think the four-day break will be good for everybody in our program. But our guys have been attentive. They're trying to do what we're asking. We're making some strides, probably not the progress that we want, but I think we're at least aware and going in the direction that we want to go in.
You mentioned early January you start SEC play and you start at Arkansas, which is at this time not an easy ask. But when I worked in Austin, they would say, Rick Barnes would say, that it's a second season once you get to conference play. You just kind of erase everything that happened in the non-conference. Do you look at it kind of the same way? Do you look at two separate seasons there between the non-conference and conference play?
Yeah, I've done it different ways. Coach Barnes will be a Hall of Famer by the time his career is over, so I'm not saying that he is wrong in my response. I think it's a little different, AJ, in our rhythm in year number one, because it's everything is brand new, and so every day is new. How we're handling the Christmas break is brand new for everybody in the program except the staff that came with me, and so how we'll handle the first nine games of conference play, how will we handle the Saturday where it's the SEC Big 12 Challenge, how will we handle the second half, you split them up home and road. I think there's a lot of different ways that you can go about it, but for sure there's a separator once you play that last non-conference game and head into conference play. And for us, as you mentioned, one of the things that will be distinctly different is the level of competition, not only at home, but also on the road. We haven't played a true road game yet. We've played four neutral site games, which is unique. So there'll be a lot that goes into conference play, but I understand what Coach was saying.
Is that something that, as you've got a little more say on what happens with scheduling going forward, is that something you'd like to see change? Would you like to have a couple of road games in the non-conference to prepare your team so their first taste of a road game isn't at Arkansas or something like that?
Well, what you want to do is you want to play a non-conference schedule that best prepares that particular team for conference play. And I'm not blaming anything on the previous staff whatsoever. I think you would find that at multiple places when there's a staff change. There's recruiting that still needs to be accomplished. There's games that still need to be scheduled. You're in the midway through the academic spring semester. Sometimes there's some academic situations that have to be addressed. It's just kind of part of the nature. I'm not saying anything in a negative way. I think one thing that I've learned in the SEC thus far is you see more neutral site games maybe in this league than any other league, because this is the only Power 5 league that there's a metric that the conference measures your non-conference schedule on. So play whoever you want to play and then average their net, which I think the first one came out yesterday. When you sign a game contract, AJ, to play a non-conference game in the SEC, when you sign all of your non-conference contracts, the net average, net being the new RPI, it has to be a minimum of 150. So what you end up seeing is it's okay to play at Gonzaga, but you end up seeing games like what Texas A&M played last year, Oregon State in Portland, and then trying to get them back home. The neutral site is kind of a good way to keep your net average where you want it to be. If you're going to play on the road, if you're going to play at home, or if it's neutral, you've got to average 150. And that, a lot of that is the MTE. A lot of that is the who you're going to play in the Big 12 Challenge. So there's a lot of numbers that go into how you figure out a schedule. But playing on the road, depending upon the opponent, for sure, I think there's value in that.
Well, that's a really curious subject, because do you take the net, the final net from last season when you're signing the contract for this year?
Yeah, there's caveats to all of it. But at the point in time that you sign the contract, it's based on what their net number was, the last net that there was at the previous season. And so you really have to study how you go about it. And without taking up the entire interview, you can find the numbers that you want, but then the issue becomes the timing. Just like for us, we played in an MTE in Thanksgiving week, and then we didn't play for a week, which was Texas. We didn't play last week because that's finals. most schools have finals. That's why you didn't see any games on TV last week, per se. But the reason why this week is still slow is some schools are taking finals right now. And so finding the number, it takes time, but you can eventually figure out, hey, in a perfect world, I want to put this puzzle together, and the number needs to be above 150. You can do that. What becomes the issue is Reed Arena available? Are the women playing that day? Two of our non-conference games at Reed Arena have been on the same. It's been a doubleheader with the women, and that's because that was the only date that was available that once we took the job that we could schedule an opponent. So it's the number, but it's also the timing. And then similar to the question you're asking, Buzz, I think you ought to play on the road. I understand why that's important, but does that number and the timing of when we can play on the road relative to the MTE we're playing in, relative to our finals, and the same question answers for the opponent. So it's time intensive for sure.
Coach, appreciate the time. Best of luck against Oregon State, and we'll talk to you, I guess, the day after you play Texas Southern. Hopefully we're talking to you coming off another win. Congrats on the A&M Corpus Christi win, and hopefully more to come before we get into SEC play.
Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you, sir. We'll talk to you next. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
That's Coach Buzz Williams. All right, I got to tell you guys now about my computer career, and listen, if you are not doing a job that you love, why are you still doing it when there's so many options? 2019's coming to an end. Who cares if you're not a math whiz? Who cares if you're not a computer guy? It's not rocket science. It's my computer career. And helping people start an IT career is what they do. You could start yours in as little as 4 months, even with no experience. Go to mycomputercareer.edu. Take their free career evaluation today, and you could start your new life as an IT pro in months, not years. And we're talking about classes meeting just twice a week on campus or live online, and you're going to get everything you need to start your new career. And it's more than a school, because they're going to help you get into the industry by working with hundreds of employers that hired their students. They're nationally accredited. Financial aid's available to those who qualify, including the GI Bill for my fellow vets. Classes start soon. Make new year, new career your resolution. Take that free career evaluation today. MyComputerCareer.edu. That's my computercareer.edu.
G'day, mate. This is Sam Windsor of the Houston SaberCats. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.